This is Due By Friday, a weekly challenge podcast with Merlin Mann, Alex Cox, and Max Temkin. This week's challenge, follow up.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm trying to set the studio up and everything is weird. Skype isn't logged in.
Oh, no.
Alex is going to have to walk me through, like, Apollo 13 how to set the studio up because we made the studio too expensive for me to know how to use it.
Oh, you're at work?
Oh, I'm coming in blind, Merlin. Oh, I'm at work, big time. I thought I was going to come in and we were, you know, I usually come in hot. And, you know, there's no producer Chris, there's no Alex, lights are off. I'm turning knobs, I'm pushing buttons, and nothing is calling Alex.
Is this it? The adventure begins.
Oh, sorry I'm late.
Hey, you got a man in your room.
Oh, that was very upsetting.
Alex, why is there a man crawling around in your room like a human centipede?
And then he was on my bed.
It touched my pillow.
I was like, Okay, here's what happened. Uh-huh. I'm going to tell a story coherently, maybe for the first time on this show. I was prepared at 9 a.m., so, because I am recording not in Merlin's neck of the woods, but the big old state of California. Ethernet has been fine all week, and then of course it craps out.
Stop.
Yes.
Alex is in California this week.
Yes.
Upsec.
Uh-huh. For the computer convention.
Perhaps. Maybe.
Yeah. So this morning you're trying to dial into our podcast Due By Friday from your hotel.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. Then what's the next thing that happened after that?
What was the last thing you remember?
Step two. Amanda,
doesn't look like anything
bed.
To me.
Amanda, my bed. step two, get a call. Miss Cox, are you trying to get on the internet? Well, yes, I am. They're like, are you having any problems? Well, yes, I am. And then
like,
there's a man outside your door.
Oh no.
And he came in and was like, I apologize. It seems that your internet is no longer working, which you think that would be like a first thing in the morning type of thing to tell somebody. And then he had to go under my bed, use some screws. There was some noises. There was an electric drill. That was exciting. And now I'm back on Ethernet. Hooray. End of story.
Hey, good job. That was almost in order and everything.
That was
Do you think they're tapping our call? Did he come in to install like some sort of, you know, bug?
Maybe he's a cuck and just got very... Actually, I think they thought
just
I was trying
to meet
to,
you.
I think they thought I was like trying to steal internet or something. I don't know.
I see. How's your room?
I mean, I like staying in hotels as long as I have an excess of Lysol wipes. I did not bring enough Lysol wipes and they were at the Safeway.
This is bad.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be fine.
Are you having fun in general, though?
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to tell a coherent story again. I flew to San Jose.
Well, you mean for the first time.
For the first time.
It's always the first time.
Yep.
So you went to the computer show in San Jose.
Who hasn't heard Alex tell a coherent story? I went to the big computer show, WWDC, but I'm not at the big computer show.
WWDC, as they say.
Dub, stocks.
Stocks.
Stocks,
funny.
Stocks.
Teeth.
Just to hold...
You're making guest appearances? I'm sorry. Please tell your coherent story.
Stocks.
Finally, I get my stocks.
And it's in the news app. Okay, no, see, I'm going to tell the story in order.
But what if I'm looking at the stock price and I don't know the news that's behind the stock price changes?
Exactly.
You know, every morning you got to wake up and you check your portfolio and you're like, did it go up? Did it go down? Anything could have happened. What happened to my portfolio?
What happened with my stocks? What's the story? What's the story behind the overnight on my stocks?
Every morning you wake up and just screaming into your pillow, how are my stocks?
Where's my stocks?
So
So you went to the computer show in San Jose.
The big computer show, and I've had some very, very important business meetings. And by that, I mean I've been hanging out with friends of the show, Todd, and being on some podcasts and talking about robots. And I guess we'll get to that later if we want to talk about the big computer show. I don't know.
I saw a cute photo of you two together.
Oh, really? Did I take
it? Let me see if I can find that and put it in the super secret text channel. Mm. Oh, look at that. Look at that. John Siracusa takes very good photographs.
He does. It's so impressive.
But there's you and Todd.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's what Siracusa calls my fake smile because I cannot smile. It's very upsetting, isn't it? I'm like, please don't kill me.
Line 20, go to smile.
I wasn't charged at 50%, so I was like,
oh, that's funny. Mm-hmm. You, let's see. Oh, yeah, so you're having fun? You look like you're having fun. You're meeting people. Are you being gracious? Are you being gracious as somebody that people want to meet?
Yes,
I told you to be gracious.
Yes, everybody's been very kind. Thank you. I thought that
are you
I
being
would...
nice back to them, or are you being I'm awkward trying, and I'm... saying, no, don't like me? You have to say thank you very much. I really appreciate that. That's what you say.
I don't want to incriminate myself. Anyway, I thought that I would just be sitting reading a book by the river all week, but they have Scoot Scoots now in the fine city of San Jose. Have you heard about the Scoot Scoots, Merlin?
There's so much Scoot Scoot discussion to be had.
I heard they were banned from the city of San Francisco.
San Francisco brought the hammer down on the Scoot Scoots.
God, I love them so much.
So, you know, we haven't really spent a lot of time talking about this on the show, but I'm a little bit curious. So we do not have them in Chicago yet. Or at least right. They're not prevalent enough for me to see them. But as an outsider, I'm actually a little bit curious about how the scooters work, like the system of getting and leaving them. And mm-hmm. so I know, what do I know about it? I know that there's this problem of people just leave the scooters everywhere. And I read the article about the bird hunters or whatever that go find
mm-hmm.
them.
Mm-hmm.
Such a good article.
It was really interesting.
There's basically this whole kind of like sub-economy of young, even high school age people who go out and they use the app to go find Scoot Scoots in the wild that they can then charge on their parents' 110 outlet for money. And it's a very cutthroat industry. You get mom's minivan, you go out, you grab all the birds you can.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And people throw them in crazy places. Like they throw them on the bank of a river.
Yes, if you can find them, it's like a treasure hunt. Yeah, if you pull it out of a river, you get extra scoot points.
And then sometimes it's a honeypot. So the burglar will take the Scoot Scoot and put it down a dark alley. And then when you go to retrieve the Scoot Scoot, they mug you.
That's how they get you.
That's mm-hmm, how they get mm-hmm. you.
Well, I wanted to see how far out of the city I could go before the Scoot Scoot was like, nope, 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 got to go back. And I rode it for about 2 hours and nothing. It was like, okay, ride is still going. And that ride cost $6 for 2 hours of use.
It's really cheap. It's like a dollar to start. And it's like $10 an hour or something.
So I need someone to like, here's I have some critical information that I'm confused about that I want answers. So how do you get a scooter? Like, let's say I leave my house and I want to take a scooter to work, right? Mm-hmm, now, mm-hmm. I know that you can use the app to locate the scooters. The mm-hmm. app will, for any particular company, the app will like put a pin where there's the nearest scooter or whatever.
Correct.
But where are the scooters? Do you see what I'm asking? Like,
yes.
Where are they?
Like, where's the known place? I think they call it a bird's nest, right?
Yes, but I've not seen a bird's nest yet. I'm going to put a screenshot in our super secret channel of one of the apps.
Do I, as a casual user of the scooter, if
yes.
I live in San Francisco and I just want to get one from my house, do I need to like climb a fence over an embankment of a river and like fish it out from the, you know, from the canal to ride it? Or are they like...
No.
I mean, the joke that everybody's going to want to make is, well, just open your door and there will be one there. Because they are kind of littered around in the main middle parts of San Francisco anyway. My wife says it's just a blight. Like out by Mission Bay, there's just so many people just leave on the sidewalk. But I think they call it a bird nest or bird's nest where you can designated places where after they've been charged, the youths bring the birds back to a certain area. And those are known like get a scooter places.
This is my other question is so the kids who drive their parents' cars around collecting the Scoot Scoots, like then I get it. They take them home, they charge it, you get your bounty. But then what? You don't just keep it, right? People don't come to your house and ring your doorbell to get the scooter. Like you have to put it somewhere, I assume.
Yes.
I think that's the second part.
All right. Part one. You sign up for the app. You scan a barcode that's on top of the scooter. You pay like it's, I just use Apple Pay. You get on the scoot, you ride it anywhere. It's literally like San Jose has a cicada amount of scooters. They're absolutely everywhere. And when I went on my 2-hour trip, I dropped it off at a Starbucks and I was in a suburb at that point. And then I was just curious and waited. And about 15 minutes later or so, some guy pulls up in a minivan, takes the scooter, and puts it in the back of the minivan.
So you like hid in a bush looking out with binoculars, like waiting.
By a bush, if by a bush you mean Starbucks, yes. And by binoculars, you mean me standing very close to a window.
So you're like Mike. You're like Mike from Breaking Bad. You're like on a stakeout, but you just want to see when the scooter company comes to get your scoot.
And then I went outside casually and said, oh, hey, are you a birder? And he looked at me like I was speaking a different language, but who knows? I probably stammered and I was trying to tell a story and it didn't work. He didn't hear this patented coherent story for the first time. And he was like, oh, yeah, I work for the company. And that was the end of the interaction. He put it in his car and drove away. So he was stealing one. I don't know. I assume that after a while, it's completely deactivated because there is a companion app, like with Lyft or whatever. It's like a birder app. So the people who pick things up are different than the people who ride them, even in like what sort of gig economy thing they use. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but so like in Chicago, we have
Divvy,
and in New York, they have City Bike, and there are designated stations where you get the Divvy and the City Bike, and you just know to go to, it's like you have to get the bike from those stations, and you have to return the bike to those stations. But with the scoots, is there a station where you can go get them?
There are a few, but they're just littered everywhere. You just see one, there are kickstands, they'll just be in the middle of the sidewalk, and then you jump on, do the little scanny thing, and you go. I don't want to ask too many questions. I'm not asking the question. I just enjoy, and then, yeah, you don't want to ask the question.
I see.
I can't answer. It's a deep, dark hole, and I'm sure it's very problematic, but they're so fun, and they're so dangerous, and I've never been happier in my life.
Isn't it? But doesn't it sort of mirror... I do have Scoots Scoot follow up for this very special episode, but it's, I mean, something you just notice across the board with people. And they actually talked about this on the ATP from the other night. That I was listening to right before this is you go through. Marco's talking about going through these phases where first you're like, what is that? And then you're like, these people are bad. And then you're like, and then you get on it and you're like, this is so fun. These go so fast. And I feel like with any kind of Scoot, you kind of, as soon as you can balance and feel like you're not going to die, and you move a little bit, and then you start to go fast, you go, oh, I understand this. It really, really makes sense. And it's a goddamn shame that they were not more careful or, let's just say, considerate from a civic standpoint about how this would be received. They did the startup thing where they basically, this all started in fucking March. March is when three of these companies came to San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
They just dropped in, fucking scooters everywhere. Like, I think over... They're talking about bargaining down to something like 1,500 on the street. So who knows how many are out there right now? And yeah, they are. They're a menace. Like if you're in some kind of assisted device, like how do you get around?
It's just such a shame because I think we've made fun of them a lot. And I do think, you know, it clearly is like a public nuisance. Like this is not tenable the way that they're being run. But it's like good urban development. Like you want, like I would love for more people to ride electric scooters than drive. Like that's highly desirable.
Oh God, it makes, in a city like this, it makes so much sense. It's such a missing piece. There was a really good article in The Atlantic that I can't find right this second.
Oh, I read that about like, it's like, I'm a scooter defender.
Like I should hate these things, but I instantly got it. And it's true. I mean, there's this, the phrase people use a lot is the last mile, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like when you're doing any kind of thing, it's not that difficult to get in a plane and go from Los Angeles to New York, but then, you know, how do you get to Williamsburg or whatever? Or how do you in fact get from the subway to the place that you're going? And a lot of people here take Muni, they take BART, they have to get around. And that idea of like, you know, anything that's good, I'm sorry to be that guy. I've tried to stop being this guy, but I am this guy. Anything that
gets us out of this fucking thing of one person driving in a car to go somewhere that is almost within walking distance is crazy. And so, you know, yeah, like Uber and Lyft are a kind of solution for that. That is, but I mean, there's a reason taxis kind of worked as a thing in New York, you know? Yep. Anyway, I agree with you. I think it's such a goddamn shame because if you're, it is one of those funny things though, where like, if you haven't done it and you have been inconvenienced by it, you're instantly turned off to it and think the whole thing is a terrible idea.
It seems like there's a very easy solution to this. Where Max keeps saying, is there a Nest? Where do you pick these up? Where do you drop them off? And if it was just like a Divvy bike or a City bike and you had to pick it up at a designated place, return it to another designated place, and obviously it's going to be in the richer neighborhoods or whatever, and if you had to pay a fine if you left the scooter somewhere, I think that solves a ton of problems because
I just don't. It's an existing model, right? Like, there's lots of bike share companies.
You don't, you hear some of this about shared bikes just because there are people who just hate bikes and hate people who ride bikes and think that the cars should own the roads for all times and everybody else is in their way. Like, that is a POV. I get that. But
hey,
we've got tons of shared bikes here, and you do not hear that particular argument because, again, there's stakes. Like, some grocery stores, I remember, I want to say back in the 90s, used to have a thing where you had to put a quarter into the, you ever see that, where you've got to put a quarter into the shopping cart to unlock it? Even it's basic Freakonomics. You're much more likely to bring your cart back so you can get your quarter back.
Right.
It's the dumbest thing in the world, but it works.
And that's the thing. I would probably, in a bind, pay the $20 or whatever if I was the dick who was late to a meeting or something. Sorry, I was late. And I don't know. It seems like, I really like your new word, wholesome. That seems like an almost wholesome business model. And then they figure out a way to recycle the batteries somehow in like a hopefully an ethical, safe way. They're so cool and they're so good. And they're so easy to ride. I was the opposite of Marco. I love this. They're perfect in every way. I don't know if this, everyone is kind of a dick who's riding these. And then, these should be illegal. They need to have a way different system. And I think shared bikes is kind of how to do it, because there's also an accessibility issue with bikes. They're scary sometimes to ride, especially in Chicago. If you're not like, I don't think people hate Divvy bikes, but people who use their own bike hate Divvy bikes. So
sure.
That's kind of, do you see
tourists.
That, Max? Yeah. And I've used a Divvy bike every once in a while. It's kind of nice.
Bikes are, a lot of this stuff, I think it cuts right to the core of like why politics is divisive, because people feel very, you know, it's like, I know lots of people who are like, I don't follow politics, right? Like, it's sports. Like, you know, I don't watch baseball. But the difference between sports and politics and like why it's so inane to say like, I don't follow politics is like, you know, baseball, like there's no consequences. Like if you don't watch baseball, it just goes away. Like there's no, it doesn't affect your life in any way. Like the team doesn't do better or worse. Like it has no bearing on anything, whether you like baseball or not. So you just, it's like, you know, it's like, I don't care about lots of things and I just ignore them. Right. Like I don't care about the fight over the new Star Wars movie that everyone's litigating on Twitter.
Right. It could be annoying to you, like culturally and annoying to your taste, but Han Solo is not actively harming you.
Yeah. And you know what? I muted Star Wars and I don't see people, saying, defend Kelly Marie Tran at all costs. And, you know, throwing themselves off of a cliff to protect an actor in a movie or the people attacking her. And I don't see that whole obnoxious debate. And you know what? My life goes on just the same. And I'll go see the new Star Wars movie and I'll enjoy it and not have to know that the stupid, meaningless fight behind it. But politics is the exact opposite of that, because it's like, well, if you don't pay attention to it, it still affects every facet of your life. So whether you care about it or not, it's like, it really does start to come out when it's like, well, what about who's using the sidewalk in front of my house or my commute to work?
Right.
Like, it is the struggle over resources that we all share together. So you have to care about it. It doesn't even make any sense to say, I don't follow politics. And it does, I agree with you, like, it does bubble up in weird ways where it's like suddenly you have a shared bike program and everyone is like, you know, loses their minds.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I feel like it's, I'm probably just repeating something everybody's already said, but there's, I feel like, cause it's always two things with me. It's two parts. One part is just basic tribalism. And that tribalism is like, whatever I've got, I don't want to lose. And nobody else is allowed to have a part of the thing that I have because they're not part of my tribe. So on the one hand, you've got the car people who can suck a bag of dicks as far as I'm concerned. And then you've got the bike people, and the bike people are the Black Panthers in this situation. They're like, hey, we've worked really hard to get stuff like bike paths. And the last thing we want is a bunch of snorkels riding around their little rented scooters in there. And everybody's got their own POV on that. And I understand it. I don't agree with it, but I do understand it. But then the other part is the almost impulsive automatic FUD, the fear, uncertainty, and doubt that we feel about new things, where you start pushing back before you've done even the basic de minimis amount of trying to understand what it could mean to make something better. And now we're getting into black and white thinking. And pretty soon you're into, well, this can't solve all of the problems, so why should it be good for anybody?
This is very much a John Green thing. I'm eating on the show, so people would be mad at me and not Max.
People said on the Reddit the other day, there was a post Max have any... Max has no respect for the listeners of this show that he ate on one of the episodes. And like... When was it implied that I had respect for the listeners of the show?
I know. There was no agreement.
Was there a promise made at some point that I had respect for the listeners of the show? Like, I'm hungry. I'm going
to
eat.
I don't think you ever said that, Max. I certainly mean, to enjoy the program, I would not install that as a tent pole of enjoying the show, for sure.
Yeah.
Did I sign something?
It's our new summer campaign, Max Cares. Da 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 da.
Hi. I just want to make it clear that
I'm
Max
Temkin.
I can barely have any less respect for the listeners of the show.
Hi. Please share all of your concerns with me.
What is bugging me, people don't imagine these problems complexly because it's so othered immediately. It's become like Occupy Wall Street, where everybody wants public transportation, but nobody agrees on the right way to do that. And maybe it is scoot scoots. What if there were Tesla scoot scoots? Oh my God. Oh. All right. Alex,
wait, is that good
over.
Or bad?
Computer show. I don't know. Wait, what's good or bad?
Was that like a moan of agony or ecstasy?
No comment.
You seemed very emotionally moved by the thought of Tesla scooters.
But I think it's also, it bubbles up something that I know I very actively struggle with. And I struggle with this because on the one hand, I absolutely see and understand why this could be or may be a terrible, terrible thing. While on the other hand, I absolutely see the benefits. And I feel that with so much gig economy stuff. We're like, I don't go to fucking Safeway anymore. And it's made my life so much better. I overtip somebody to bring groceries to my house and they're getting paid. I know it's not the best thing, but it has changed. It has made my life so much better because I'm a privileged white man and I can do that.
Merlin, you're not going to a mom and pop shop. You're not going to Safeway or Target instead, you know? Like, you can't tip your Target clerk. So maybe it just, it feels a little better to me. I don't know. But again, also, privileged white person.
But I mean, I do understand also that there's all kinds of, and so this gets me to, so when I look at the what is it called, whatever, birds, scooters, the scoots, there is a really big problem with Silicon Valley startup culture in a lot of ways. So just to zoom in on one right here, what was the catchphrase at Facebook? Move fast and break stuff, something like that.
Yeah.
Something like that, which I think they're not, you know, touting so much anymore. But that is part of the idea of almost every one of these companies is to do something disruptive. And a lot of times that disruption means routing around the old system that is one reason why it is costly and hard to scale. So I'm not saying that they're cheating exactly, but like, you know, it's for the same reason that Michael Cohen's taxi medallions aren't worth so much anymore, to just dive in without hardly any kind of approval from the community or the government. They come in and do this, and that puts a lot of people off their beer, which I think is understandable.
My guess is that very few people object to the concept of like grocery couriers or scooters or Uber drivers or any of that. Like, I think these are like, they're conceptually sound things that, you know, one breakthrough that I think gets too much credit for these things existing is like the app economy and everyone having phones. Like, yeah, could you have Lyft if everyone didn't have cell phones? No. Like, you have to have the cell network and the app install base and everything to make the business viable. But, you know, the whole story of like Lyft and Uber, for example, is that it's like the app revolution created this. But it's actually two things simultaneously. It's the app revolution enabled it. But there's another factor too, which is the Uber economy, which is that you have to have a class of people that need to drive and a class of people that want to be driven. And if the insane wealth stratification and the underemployment of like a whole generation of people makes it so that people are forced into these gig economy jobs. Like they're totally like they're, you know, it's like everyone's long been accustomed to the idea that, you know, like that the working people have like nothing to sell but their labor, and that your labor is like abstracted from you. And it's just this thing, the service that you'd sell for money. And now it's like, we've even gotten rid of the comfortable idea of like a job with like, you know, benefits and loyalty and like,
that's a good distinction.
Know, life.
Yeah.
No, I'm so loyal to me. I'm very loyal to VMAX.
We'll see how many stickers you bring back from Dub Dub. But but I'm just saying, like, it's like, it's now it's totally atomized, right? Like your labor is like, it's like by the minute, right? It's like a commodity, like pork bellies, and it's ugly and it's exposed to people. And I think it makes people mad when you transparently see like that there's two things happening. There's the good idea of scooters as public infrastructure, which I think we all support and can see a good execution of, that's like right there, and it would be awesome. But then there's the dependency of the business model on poor people who have no choice but to sell their labor as like scooter gatherers, you know, cleaning up after rich people. And the other piece about this that, man, we need to get off of this because it's not funny, but there was an amazing, I think maybe they were talking about this on our beloved Chapo Trap House. But, you know, rich people have an incredible amount of class anxiety right now. So you guys might remember that New Yorker story about how rich people are doing doomsday prep to prepare for the inevitable collapse of the system that they've engineered. So people have an incredible amount of class anxiety. They know that they're perpetuating an injustice and they're doing something that's wrong and they're taking advantage of people. And so you get one of the ways that expresses itself is you get the mythical coal miner takes up an enormous amount of the liberal imagination, or like the J.D. Vance's like hillbilly elegy, right? So it's right. These poor people.
It's this generation's starving African child. It's the Trump card that you can throw down at any point.
Correct.
To stop the conversation.
Correct. And like now we're all – three of us are implicit in making people's lives pretty miserable who are in this gig economy and labor for us. But, you know, let's use Chicago as an example. The people who do labor for me that I'm complicit in these unfair employment situations, you know, they are black and they're going to live on the South Side, and they're the people who carry my shit and bring my packages and make my coffee. And there is an amazing amount of anxiety about that. So people will like take this class anxiety and they'll sublimate it so that they worry about this mythical creature, the West Virginia coal miner, a guy who does not exist and I'll never meet and I'll never be accountable to. And didn't you say the other day or post something, Merlin, that there's more people who work in museums than are coal miners?
Mm-hmm. But he represents the person of another generation who did incredibly difficult, underpaid work, right? they were kind of the Instacart of their time.
It's the poor person that I can bring myself to care about because they don't actually exist.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right, the poor person that actually is suffering as a result of these gig economy things that we use, it's too uncomfortable for us to say, this guy in my neighborhood who brings me my Amazon packages or, you know, makes my cappuccino foam is suffering as a result of my decisions.
Or the person with an MA in gender studies and pottery who has $200,000 in student debt.
Right.
A double major.
Anyway, let's see.
I can tell you this pod is misgendered, and that's all you need to know about it. Please remember to like and subscribe.
Five-star
reviews really help.
Digga, 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 digga. Outgoing Starbucks chairman Howard Schultz rips Democrats for veering too far left. How are we going to pay for these things? He's running.
they're sure having a week.
Howard Schultz is running.
Why'd he leave?
How are we going to pay for these things?
Well, I wonder what the things are. All I saw as a headline is that he is credited as being the person who brought us something called modern Starbucks, which I guess is the third place notion.
The third place.
Was that him?
I think so. Yeah.
Okay. And so what is it? What is it Democrats preventing happening? What? We don't want what?
So he's running for president. It seems to be the rumor. He's kind of putting feelers out to run for president. And he just had this great quote the other day. He rips the Democratic Party for veering too left. And he goes, how are we going to pay for these things?
Oh, Jesus.
We're going to raise your taxes, bitch.
Oh, God.
Oh, 50 more cents hard. A latte. Mm.
Yeah.
Looking forward to that extremely light blue wave. Mm-hmm. It's going to be real effective.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Elections. What are you going to do?
We did pretty well last night. Yeah. The California situation reserved itself, resolved itself.
The who's that?
The California situation that everyone was very worried about, resolved itself, right?
We got Democrats
on the ballot on all the races.
Well, you got that guy that likes Russia. He's coming back. Rohrbach?
Oh, he sucks.
Devin Nunes did well last night.
He's very splotchy.
he looks like a wax impressionist.
Look at a picture of him. Look at a picture of him.
Yeah. Dana Rohrbacher, is that it?
Yeah.
What a
You're
name.
You're going to hear it's me, like Rohrbacher.
Okay. Dana... this is our new bit, is Googling things.
Google Dana Rohrbacher.
Google Dana Rohrbacher. But look at how splotchy
Young
he is.
Dana Rohrbach.
Dana Rohrbacher feet.
You know what? He looks like a grandpa that is a little too, is not racist enough, but enough where you're like, oh, I don't know.
He's not going to yell the N-word at the Thanksgiving table, but he is going to ask, what about black-on-black crime?
look at Chicago. Look what's happening in Chicago. Enough said. Can I mention one here? This is from February. Jess Dweck on Twitter, the Dweck. Wayne LaPierre looks like a Halloween mask where you know it's supposed to be a president, but you can't tell which one. And now I think about that all the time. Go Google Wayne LaPierre, and it's true.
Oh my
God. He looks like a composite sketch of presidential masks.
He looks like the bad guy from Men in Black, where he's wearing the skin suit and it's a little loose.
Give me sugar and water. More.
I'm watching a new show. So I saw that on Twitter, read something about the sequel to The Good Wife, which is called The Good Fight. Did you guys watch The Good Wife?
No.
No.
I didn't either, but I heard that it was really good. And the New Yorker TV critic, Helen Rosner, who's one of my favorite TV writers, my tastes probably most closely align with hers. So, like, I know when she recommends something, I'll generally like it. She's also very funny on Twitter, and definitely recommend giving her a follow. She is at Hells, H-E-L-S. But she wrote a really nice piece about the Good Fight, which is the CBS like digital sequel to The Good Wife. And it's a sequel show, but you can just start watching it. Like, I just started watching it and I didn't have a lot of problems. And I fucking love it. It's really good. It's, you know, it's network TV, but it's like good network TV.
But wait, is it digital? Can you watch it on regular old people CBS? Or is it just like a Star Trek thing?
I think it's in their Star Trek app.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, I let's say bought it.
Okay.
And I have
the files
and I'm watching it in Plex.
Mm. Yes.
But it's
and you
really,
recommend it?
It's really good. It's highly watchable, and season one I liked, but season two is like outstanding. Like, it really hits its stride in season two, and it's very much about what it's like to live through the Trump presidency.
Okay.
It really captures how it feels to live through the Trump presidency better than any other show, but in a funny way.
It's funny?
Yes, yeah. It's a comedy drama. Yeah.
I heard a good interview with Armando Iannucci about Death of Stalin on some TV podcast. It was so good. You know the scene at the beginning when the orchestra's playing and Stalin is listening at home and calls up the studio and says, send me a recording.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You remember how the movie starts and everybody scrambles?
I definitely have never felt that ever.
We lock the theater and do it all again?
My throat like closed
Alex,
up.
Do not make me put you on a list.
you're gonna have to just forget about Maddie until they're useful to us again. So basically, he said there were so many things where he had to actually dial it down because he was afraid no one would believe it. And so in that example, what happens in the movie is that the conductor, when he learns about this, freaks out, passes out, hits his head. So they have to go and find somebody else to come in and direct the symphony in his pajamas. But there's actually three people in reality that they had brought in.
Oh my
gosh.
There
was the original guy who did actually hit his head and get knocked out. There was a second guy they brought in, but he was drunk, so they had to go and get a third person.
Oh my God. I know that it's a true story that that Stalin's fail son killed the Olympic hockey team.
Fun fact.
And that's the guy from Homeland. The guy from Homeland is the fail son, right?
Yeah. So Stalin's fail son like ordered the hockey team to get on a plane and fly, even though all the aviation people said that it wasn't safe, and the plane crashed and it killed the whole hockey team. And then he like replaced them with like a new team and hoped that no one noticed. It's kind of a background story in the movie, but it's a real thing that happened.
That is so disturbing.
Have either of you watched the new season of Arrested Development?
Tried.
I'm trying to get through the recut of season four because I forgot. I watched season four once, and then I was like, I don't want to return to this because it kind of made me sad.
I am really, really not feeling it. I had heard that the first two episodes, I think on the watch, they had said that the first two episodes are a rough go because it is all like catch up. So I hopped into the third one. I'm like, oh my God, Michael Cera is like 45.
It's like watching the Next Generation movies. It's like, I'm very nostalgic for this thing, but now they look like kind of melty.
It's so...
It's like it's the Good Ship Grandpa.
It's funny because a lot of people, the whole cast, Jeffrey Tambor's a dick. We all know Jeffrey Tambor's a dick,
you've never made a woman cry at work.
Yeah,
like, it doesn't look like anything to me.
Oh, it's just the industry. Yeah, it's fine. Everything's fine.
We're very fortunate to have this job. Moving on.
But I watched most of the recut, and I did not like it at all. I liked this sort of Rashomon style. It wasn't amazing, but I kind of liked what happened. And they had to dial back all the jokes because they did not expect Trump to win. Mitchell Hurwitz. I wrote a really good season.
Mojave.
Mojave.
Try not hearing it now. Mojave.
Big Doug, Big Computer Show, maybe?
Huh? Big Computer Show! I'm running iOS 12 on an old phone.
I was so mad.
You should see the stacked notifications. It is sweet.
Oh, God. I want to.
It's so good. It doesn't have shortcuts yet. Yo, Duke boys.
Doug.
In a memo obtained by Business Insider, Uber CEO Dara, Khosrowshahi encouraged employees to say that they, quote, have the D when they have the authority to make decisions in meetings. Claiming to have the D is an established managerial technique, according to a 2006 article in the Harvard Business Review. But to some young Uber employers, it sounds like a slang phrase, I got the D, which means, quote, I had sex.
We're encouraging our employees to, when they complete a task, say, I ate that ass. This is well known in business circles and entrepreneurs. I ate that ass as a way of saying I've successfully completed my point. We encourage our employees to
I
ate that ass.
You know, I don't read a lot of, you know, business books and self-help stuff, but if the Harvard Business Review says this is good, I think we should start doing it at Cards Against Humanity. We should say, I have the D.
Okay, well, let's reverse engineer this a little bit. So let's say, for example, what are the kinds of things that we struggle to communicate at work? Mm-hmm. Like, we have things where we need to meet a deadline, mm-hmm. right? You want to have a subtle way of saying, like, don't overdo it, but we need you to really press a little harder for this deadline.
Mm-hmm. Maybe
I think you say take. You say yeah, you say
you're
take
not
going to
be paid
you say,
anymore.
You say take it all. Take it all. In business circles, you would say that. I mean, listen, you guys. I know it's Friday, but you guys really need to take it all.
Yeah, it's not me saying that. It's the Harvard Business Review.
That's Harvard Business School. HBS.
And if there, I'm thinking about other things, like maybe you need to get a project done, but you need to be a little bit more subtle, and you just reverse the cowgirl, and then you,
right.
I'm Justin. The jokes don't land. I'm not Travis.
No, I know what you're saying. Like, for example, if you think the approach is mostly working, but you need to iterate a little bit, you'd say spin that twink.
Exactly. Thank you.
Is that what it's called? A spinner, Alex?
Yeah. Yeah, but we're going to spin this project around.
Right. If you're worried that there's leaking going on, you want to make sure you keep your stuff, you know, from getting out, you would say, we're going to have to pull a soft dike.
So what's the new phone again? Stack notifications, huh?
Stack notifications. It's pretty sweet.
And I watched it with subtitles. I thought it was a in recent Apple,
I liked it way more than I expected. They're making things better.
I'm so happy. I'm so happy.
In Apple, in recent Apple presentations, I felt that they were way too long and very boring and very technical, and that they were getting really lame and dad jokey and straying away from the cool, understated confidence that made Apple keynotes fun to watch in the first place. And I feel like this keynote was much better. I thought that it was very watchable, and that they showed they did a better job of showing, like, not what the computer can do, but what you can do with it. I thought it was a good presentation.
Totally agree. And so my controversial POV on this, I just sent you guys a link to something I watched with my family last night, which is The Verge cut it down. Apple WWDC 2018 keynote in 14 minutes.
Well, how are you going to know the customer sat statistics or the brightness on the screen?
What about the e-Lego?
Yeah.
But, you know, okay, so here's my just quick hot take coming in hot is, you know what? I love the stuff that they're doing, and I just don't think the presentations were that good. And they were fine. Like, the lady on the exercise machine made me very uncomfortable.
Oh, Max had a good tweet.
What?
Anna, I've got good news and bad news. Good news is you are going to be demoing the new Apple Watch features on stage at WWDC.
Bad news is you're going to have an elevated heart rate. My wife was watching it last night. What did she say? Sometimes she just drops one. She'll just go like, oh, these people are all on beta blockers. I said, what? I said, what do you mean they're all on beta? She said, oh, these people are, there's no way you could get up there.
Oh, and, exactly.
And could be a woman on the stage without, I was like, what does that even mean? She's like, oh yeah, when I used to work in psych. They're like, cut this out. All the docs would give themselves beta blockers whenever they had to do a talk because you lose all fear.
Yeah.
What's a beta blocker?
I don't know, but now I want them.
Yeah, give me that.
It keeps your heart rate low, but it doesn't have the effect. There's no sedative effects, so it's not like taking Xanax before you go on stage where you're like, woo, Lego. But you're just kind of stable and calm.
That's my new thing, is I'm going to start taking Xanax before I give a talk, and I'm going to become a SoundCloud rapper.
I thought, you know, the presentation itself, yeah, it's fine, but I think what they're doing, some of the iOS 12 and watch stuff, I think is really good. And just because a lot of it is stuff I've really wanted. That notifications thing, did you see that, Max? The thing where you can now go in and say quiet notifications or turn these notifications off. That's huge. Like, when you long press on a notification, you get options for what to do about those kind of notifications in the future.
Oh, that's interesting. You know, Merlin, you've been like voice guy for a long time, and I felt like you were pretty full of shit, and it's not that good and not that useful. And it's like really overblown how good and useful it is.
No.
And I'll say with what are they calling it? The automator, voice automator,
shortcuts.
Or whatever. Shortcuts. Mm-hmm. I was watching that and I was thinking, like, it's here. Like, we're here. Like, this is the thing I've been waiting for to, like, fully commit to doing voice shit.
This is phase two of the Marvel universe, I think. I'm very excited. It's phase two of the Marvel universe, Apple universe. Like, we are getting to a point where Siri is going to become the operating system. I got some hums.
Listen. Let's see, I'm trying to see some good ones here. So right now,
I really enjoyed when they said that they're definitely not going to merge iOS and the Mac because they're two different operating systems, but however, they are doing that.
They are. They're basically moving iOS to the Mac.
No. Stack, stack, stacks. Stack, 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 stack. I'm just quacking it at this point. It's so good.
What did we think of the developer's David Attenborough video? I feel like almost all the comedy videos are pretty embarrassing that Apple does.
I liked it a lot. I thought it was silly. It played to the audience.
To me, if they had balls, they would have made the developer video making more fun of developers, right? Showing them, like, I don't know, just all the funny shit about computer programmers and developers. Like, they had such rich material.
They fear for their livelihood because Apple is so unreliable.
Yeah. That'd a new predator has entered the ecosystem. Sandboxing. Who will enter, survive and who leaves. Will find a niche?
You will leave the App Store very soon. You will come back to the App Store only after much money has exchanged hands.
Don't worry.
In a world.
But your app will be illustrated, and you'll have a tiny head and a big body, and you'll be sitting on some sort
That's
of chair.
Weird.
Yeah, right?
That's weird. And they got pointy hands? I don't like that.
Oh,
I don't like sharp
I
hands.
I don't. Yeah.
I love the emoji stuff. That was cool.
Tongues.
Tongue detection.
What did I say? So we covered this a little bit on Back to Work. Here's my exciting stuff. I think the DND, the Do Not Disturb stuff is great. I think the bedtime mode or whatever is really good. I love the notification stuff. Shortcuts is not on the phone yet as an app, but if you go into Siri in settings, hope I'm not breaking my NDA. I've been using the beta for several weeks. You go into Siri in settings and you'll see suggestions in there for things you've done recently that you might want to turn into a shortcut. I think all that stuff is real promising.
That's so baller. It's so good.
It really is. It's actually, do not follow my advice here because I'm doing this on my old 7 Plus, but it is, no way am I putting this on anything that I use a lot.
Will you tell
me
when I can go?
When it's just wait till the public beta. It'll come in summer. Yeah.
I bet it'll, I mean, it's strangely stable though so far.
Right? I was at the live talk show last night and it was like, I mean, obviously the crowd is mostly developers, but Gruber asked.
Was it just Maltz?
I mean, to be fair, I've already forgotten the guy's name who is he was on stage and he is the VP of Apple's VR/HR team. Not HR. Fuck.
That would be a funny.
That would
I wear
be
a lot
good
of hats
job.
Here. I take care of the employees and the make-believe employees. All you need is a 14-foot wooden table and you can have an employee that turns into a guitar. But now let's see what it's really like if I see my employee normal sized. Now you're a Lego. Hi, I'm Robert Minifig. I'm in charge of the Lego HR division.
Please come in and close the door behind you. And would you like to have this meeting in a scene from Star Wars Episode 3?
And he ends with 3 amputations. Every time we watch that scene, my daughter and I watch and go, wow, he's having a really bad day. Jedis are dicks.
No, they are. Man, he was hot for a while.
That scene has my favorite line of dialogue from any Star Wars movie where Anakin goes, but from my point of view, the Jedi are evil.
I am speaking a line of dialogue now.
They killed women and children too.
The younglings.
The young-youngs.
So, did you guys see that Cars Against Humanity got in trouble yesterday?
I didn't know if we were allowed to talk about it.
You just retweeted something really funny. What, is this for the movie poster things?
Yeah, so we did we have Target, the chain store where they sell underpants and cosmetics.
The Unspeakable Lady products, yep.
Energy bars and Legos. We're Legos. Sold in Target, Legos. And every once in a while, Target emails us or calls us and they're like, we have a seasonal promotional opportunity for you to do. And usually we say no because we can't think of any, you know, it's like, they're like, would you like to be in a special President's Day display? And we're like, no. And, but they offered us a Father's Day display this year. And we fucking love making fun of dads. It's like one of our number one joke topics. So we're like, we're going to jump on this Father's Day display. We're doing it. And they told us, we had all these different ideas. We had one that was set up where we were just going to sell like grill spatulas and HDMI cables and Cards Against Humanity, like all like an all-in-one like dad station. And then Target told us that on the left, I forgot what it is. On the left side, there were two, we had like movies on either side of us. So on like the left side of the thing, I actually have the info here.
These are so fucking good.
It's like on the left side is like, I don't know, it's like Mad Max. Oh, no, it's Dunkirk and Jurassic World. Those are the movies. So it's a three-sided display. On the left is Dunkirk, in the middle is Cards Against Humanity, and on the right is Jurassic World. So we were like, immediately we were like, okay, we have to make our own movies to go with Dunkirk and Jurassic World that you buy for dad. So we created like a Markov chain generator that made 90s action movies, and we just picked the funniest ones and then made movie posters, you know, DVD cases of them. And it's on a display.
You're telling me these weren't written?
No, these were made by the titles were made by a Markov chain generator.
Breakpoint, Dawn, Infinity.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Blood Oath, Remembrance.
Here, I'm going to put, if you go to our
Swedish
website.
Swedish Compromise.
So if you go to our website for this, it's kadaddy.com.
Oh my God.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so go to kadaddy.com and then there's a little generator and you can click make a 90s action movie.
Titan Warrior.
Massive Horizon.
The Sixth Blood. This one is great. Data Erasure, Game of Shadows.
Maximum Centurion.
Oh, God.
Oh, these are good. Final Night.
Hot Honor Redemption.
Zero Spy 3, Ultimatum.
Bad Attack. So anyway, we did our promotional email for this yesterday. We launched it yesterday, and we wrote the email as like a letter from your dad going like, you know, hi, it's your dad. Like, all I've ever wanted for Father's Day is this, you know, DVD thing. And I don't know, it was funny. It made us laugh. And we sent it out to our mailing list of like a million people. And almost immediately we got an all caps email back, like 30 seconds after it sent from MailChimp. We got our first reply, even before the out of office responders started coming. And when the out of office responders start coming, by the way, when you send an email to a big list, it's like something out of like Game of Thrones, where the like army of the dead starts like rising from their graves and coming at you.
You just see arrows it's coming at you.
It's crazy. It's like terrifying seeing all the out of office emails come in. But anyway, we got our first response like 10 seconds after the email went out, and it was just all caps. This guy replies back, "My dad is dead." And we were like,
unsubscribe.
And Jen and I looked at each other and we were like, we may have made a slight miscalculation here. And we did get, we probably got 100 replies of people who are like, my dad is dead. And a lot of them would put in the details of when their dad died. So the worst one, the ones I felt worst about were people were like, my dad died yesterday.
Oh, God. Oh.
But then there were also people who emailed us, and they were like, one woman was literally like, my father died 30 years ago, and this email was very upsetting to receive. And like, we didn't reply because there's nothing, I mean, there's absolutely nothing we can say to anything we reply. We'll just,
you should have included a trigger warning for
them.
Fatherhood.
It was pretty
T-dub.
I don't think it was the best. We could have anticipated this, but whatever.
And so are the cards inside the DVD cases?
Yeah. So it's the same pack in every DVD, but then it's just these funny DVD cases. But anyway, I just thought it was funny that people were like really emotionally bruised, and they were like, "My dad died 30 years ago." It's like maybe we're not the issue. You know what I mean? Like.
But he would have loved Brock Chavez in Red Fear, Massive Heat.
Maybe seek therapy if you're infuriated at us enough that you have to write us a mean email that your dad died 30 years ago and you're inconsolable at an email that talks about Father's Day.
Mm.
Maybe we're not the villain in that story.
Yeah, what's weird to me is like Facebook knows all about you, and yet all of my friends who have parents who have passed away recently, like they've been just literally shopping for gravestones. Why can't you, like, you know, maybe not have ads for flowers for Mother's Day, maybe not have ads for golf for Father's Day,
or maybe not a throwback to like, hey, Dad's last chemo. Like, people whose kids have died, they're like, on this day. Oh, thanks, buddy.
Max, remember when, both of you, do you remember when Target, like, outed a teenage daughter for being pregnant by saying?
Yes.
what if the next email is like, hey, congratulations on it. This joke is going nowhere, but I just, like, we don't have data on people.
Some people emailed us and they were like, it was really rude of you to send this to me after my father died last year. And it's like, well, we didn't.
Well, that's why we sent it, dude. We knew he was dead. That's why we sent it. We thought you'd think it's funny. We specifically sent this to you to hurt you personally.
Right. We didn't actually only send it to you because your dad is dead. It's like you're on a mailing list of a million people and we send it to everyone.
Well, and you know, you sign up for a mailing list for a wholesome company like Cards Against Humanity, you don't expect something offensive in the mail.
I know.
Like fatherhood.
Well,
fatherhood.
Not if it makes fun of you, certainly. That crosses a line.
Little panda that can't keep its eyes open. So, Dugga Dugga. Oh, wait.
My dad is dead.
I wonder if people are going to email after their dad has died and be like, remember when I got that email? It was very triggering.
Yeah. I think we're still getting them today, too.
If people complain, you should offer to put their dad's name as an actor in next year's one.
Then the final performance by Robert.
That was another funny thing. People were like, keep this in mind the next time you do a promotion like this. It's like, what promotion will we do making fun of your dead parents again? Like, uh-oh, this is really going to impact our Mother's Day plans.
You're going to have a virtual HR meeting. Challenge. Challenge this week was mine. And my idea was, now that we're into our Diggity 81st episode, I thought it'd be fun. This sounds like easy log rolling, but I think this could be interesting. The idea is I challenged us all to go back and look at previous episodes and to provide some follow-up in the time since that challenge. Are there new things? Are there surprising things? Or have you stuck with something or rejected something? Do you have strong changes in feeling? So this week is all about follow-up. Copyright John Siracusa, 2011.
Yep, definitely not a trademark and definitely not in 2007.
Okay, all right. So my dad's dead, man. He died when I was 7.
My dad is dead!
Stocks!
Stocks, stocks,
stocks! Stocks, stocks, stocks!
Everyone look under your chair. There's a stock!
You get a dad. You get a dad. You get a dad. That's not funny, Oprah. Aww. That's some bullshit, man.
Who wants to start? I feel like, Merlin, you have the most follow-up/feedback.
Yeah, kick us off. Kick us off, Merlin. Maybe we'll do like a draft. Should we do a draft style?
Kind of, but I mean, I just thought it'd be fun. It's just real, real easy, straightforward. Is there anything where, especially where like you have developed a stronger feeling about it? And I thought it'd be fun to just hop onto others as well. I mean, one of my no-brainers, I got some no-brainers. Well, okay. All right. Well, one no-brainer for me is the Scoot Scoot.
Oh, yeah.
So we had a challenge to go out and buy a costly scooter and because I was doing it and I still love, we can't go too far on this because we've already talked way too much about scooters, but I also want to just share my screenshot here. I'm up to 125 miles on this thing.
You ride it around town?
I ride it around my neighborhood. So
I saw
like,
when Veronica and I were up in the suburbs seeing my parents, we saw a number of people on Scoot Scoots.
Yeah, it really is. I hope I don't get too much blowback as a result of all the bird problems. But no, I'm just loving mine to death. I still use it for jaunts of a mile or less a lot of the times. It's great for doing errands. The single most difficult problem I have with it is like kind of knowing where to put it, that it'll be out of the way and won't bother anybody. Mm-hmm. But I just want to toss to you guys. And I wanted to ask Alex, you used to just like to drive it around the office at night. Mm-hmm, as a therapeutic thing. How much are you guys using it? Are you taking it out more since the challenge? Are you going places on it?
I've taken it to work from home to work a couple of times. And it's fun. It's wonderful. But on the busier days, I'm just like, oh, lots of people are watching. But now it has led me to investigate other fun forms of electronic transportation, and this was pre-birder, pre the, you know, cicada of Scoot Scoots. But I don't know, like electric bikes in general. And the cool thing with the whole Scoot Scoot is it's perfect for the this is too far to walk, but also it's not far enough to take a lift. So there's a Jewel like a mile and a half to my house, and I'm lazy and I don't want to walk there. And it's also just very calming. I don't know. I ride it at least once a day. I almost brought it to San Jose. It's just, I can't.
It's hard to describe.
Exactly.
You can just stand on it. I just stand on it sometimes and rock back and forth, and it's totally fun. But I know exactly what you mean about those. There's certain kinds of trips. Like sometimes it's something as simple as like, I need to go to the ATM or I need to go to Walgreens. And like, it takes about one third of the time that
exactly
it would with walking.
Yes.
And it is fun and therapeutic. You get out of the house for a minute. Maybe you get in the sunshine and I'll just buzz around. Oh, I have a new favorite ATM. We have an awesome new ATM. It lets you pick the denomination of money that you want.
Isn't that all? Wait, what?
No, you go. No. You say I want $400. I want three $100 bills.
Oh, okay. That's
want
awesome.
I want four 20s and I want four $5 bills, and it gives it to you.
$5
bills.
Mojave.
Have you found any place for Mojave?
Oh, God.
Honestly.
Have you found any place for it in your life, Max?
No. Okay. I ride Alex's around the office, but I would never take that thing out in public.
You know what? It's really? A full body fidget toy, really. Like, it's just nice.
No, it is. You're both stimming. Look it up.
Probably, but it is. I don't know. I mean, it's for sure, you know, vis-a-vis the earlier discussion, you know, it sure makes a lot of sense. Because you know what you don't have to do? You don't have to go and, you know, wait at lights to turn left. You get to take any path you want. Every sidewalk is as fast as every other sidewalk.
What do you do with it when you get to your destination?
That's what I was saying. That's the only difficult part. The only part that, like I was saying, though, is that, like, you don't have to park. In San Francisco, you do not have to find a parking
spot. You do have to do something with it when you get to the grocery store.
When I take it to the grocery store, I don't do it because I have a gig economy for that. But when I got to go somewhere like the bodega or whatever, I get off it like a gentleman and I put it in the walking around mode and I just bring it in with me. Sometimes if I go to the butcher shop, I'll leave it in like an unobtrusive area off to the side. If I take it to my kid's school, oh God, I have an anecdote. If I take it to my kid's school, I will put it in sort of the lobby area off to the side. Real quick, one day, actually, I have to tell you, we have two scoots. I have one, and my daughter has one, and she likes it pretty well. I make her wear a helmet. I'm a total hypocrite. But one day she's like, "Oh, when you pick me up today, bring the scoot." And I was like, "I could probably do that." And I had this plan in mind where I would ride her scoot because mine has the extender stick on it where you can kind of like lead it around. And I totally ate it, like right in front of two college girls. It was so bad. I was like, oh, I got back up and I tried to do it again. And I kept running, the tires kept running into each other. It's bad enough. Have you had the experience of your Segway tire running into something it didn't expect and it goes pop and it like jumps in the air? Mm-hmm, imagine you're riding a scoot when two scoot hit each other. So I did the dorkiest thing I've ever done in my life, which is I picked up her scoot, like a great extended penis. I held it in front of me and got on to my scoot and rode it down the hill.
Meep, meep.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Boy. That's right. I got a scoot and a second scoot. How do you like that?
That's like how people use drafts. Is they're riding on the scooter holding 10 other scooters.
Okay. Well, that was my follow up on that. I'm so glad I got it.
All right. Digga. Alex. Alex, what's your
yes, hello.
What's your
I'm here.
Pick
I'm
that you're
going to
revisit?
Hello.
I just really like all of the sleep challenges we've done and, you know, like the health stuff in general. I remember when Merlin made us take a nap, it was infuriating and I couldn't do it. And now
you're still never gotten over that anger. I think.
You know what? Yesterday I took a nap and it was wonderful. I think we talked about this, how in Rules of Thumb, where 3 hours or 1 hour of sleep before 7 p.m. is like 3 hours of sleep after 7 p.m. And it was like a Red Bull, except I didn't want to puke afterwards. It was wonderful. And I've been tracking my sleep a lot more and using Exist.io, and I do find like it actually is helpful. Like, you can't exercise this close to bed. Now I have tags for the genre of movies and shows that I watch before bed. Yeah.
So you're doing that in you're doing the hashtags.
Oh yeah. I love the custom tags in Exist.io. It is. I know that we've made fun of it. Like, in Washington, D.C., you weigh more. But
you weigh more in Washington.
But
you get more steps when you have more activity. What?
I love the custom tags, though. And
you know what? You really sold me. Boy, we could do another deep dive on sleep. I have like six different apps I'm using right now. I'm only feeding three of them. I'm only letting three of them write to Apple Health because some of them have been so stupid. But your Sleep Watch is really good.
Yes.
I got my lady to try Auto Sleep, and then I was like, you should try Sleep Watch. It's actually, if you only want to run one of these dumb apps, that one, the results are good, and it makes sense when you look at it. It actually makes sense. It's not just a chart.
Sleep Watch.
Did we try that one for the podcast?
No. Or maybe it was like when we pimped our sleep. I think that was the first time I brought it up. But it's one of my favorites for someone who's just starting out in the nerdery.
Yeah. Sleep Watch by Body Matter.
Do you want me to go through my quickies?
No, we're doing a draft.
We're drafting. All right, Max.
Mine is the episode from June 22nd, 2017, episode number 30. There's no condoms in the fantasy suite. As a result of that episode, I've now watched every episode of The Bachelor and The Bachelorette since that was broadcast. I'm hooked. I really like
it. So you really like it, you get into it. Are you hate watching it or is it fun?
I want to say that I'm not hate watching it, but I am ironically watching it. So
Is this something where you like the ding-a-lings? Is it like watching a cooking show where people can't cook?
It's like watching a cooking show, but with none of the cooking and just the boring. It's like just the parts I don't like on Top Chef. But I don't know what to say. It's very watchable, and it gives me something to talk about with our writers and the people in the office. And you know, it's like if I don't care about sports, it's like here's one thing I can talk with people about.
That's the other thing. Sports are cool this week, and I've been watching the Merlin's team, the Golden Boys, and it's been a lot of fun. I think I like sports.
They got a game tonight. Big game tonight.
Why? Can someone explain the meme of LeBron James making the gesture at some other guy?
Well, first of all, I just want to stipulate, I'm not a fan of sports ball. I'm not even that much a fan of our local team is in. My wife is far and away the biggest sports fan. She's an athlete and a fan of sports. So she is really into a especially when you get into playoffs, pennant race, all that kind of stuff with the Giants and the Warriors. Not so much with the football team. But and as a result of that, now my daughter really likes it. So I watched it kind of grudgingly, and I watched my first Warriors game, maybe the third game I've ever seen ever, ever, ever. But here's the thing. Basketball is really fucking exciting.
It's soccer, but good.
But it moves fast and the games are short. Mm-hmm. The quarters are short. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know this sounds exactly like what it is, which is like an outsider coming in, but it's not like watching fucking baseball. Like, and on top of it, all of the four teams, are so fucking good. And the way they hit three pointers is like watching magic. Mm-hmm. It is insane. The three pointers with no setup at all, these guys can throw. I'm just saying, I'm not trying to make a case. Oh, yay, basketball. But it is actually like weirdly exciting to watch. What happened in that game was LeBron James, who a lot of people say might be the greatest basketball player of all time. Basically, he is, well, how does one say? He's the good one on the team. Like he does a lot of the scoring. He had 50 points in the previous to the last game. And in that game, one of the guys got the ball and apparently didn't know what the score was. And he kind of futzed around with it. And he kind of blew. At that point, it was, I think they were behind. And he blew it. And LeBron, what you're seeing in that meme is LeBron going like, what were you doing? Like,
why did he blow it? What happened? That's what I'm curious about. I mean, I can tell LeBron James is mad at someone else for doing something, but what did he do?
I think what happened was did he get a rebound? And then he didn't move fast enough to take the shot. He basically went into killing time mode.
Yeah,
when
he forgot
been
the rules of
forward.
The game and forgot the score of the game.
He didn't know the score, yeah.
I like when I see a meme happen in real life. It's like watching someone pick up a scooter and put it in their van.
Yeah, it gives me a flashback, though, to like playing like touch football or nerf football as a kid where there'd be one really good guy on the team and like you really don't want to disappoint that one person. It's so shameful. The one person who like has deigned to be on your team.
Do you think the better you are at basketball, the more weird athletic wear you're supposed to have on you at all times? Like, what does that do? What does, you know what I'm saying? Like the tights, the armband, is that so that the
gear has gotten very strange.
I don't know what's happening. Other than the mouth guards, I don't understand why you need like volleyball
pads. Well, I remember this from watching the Bulls in the 90s. Every guy on the team's got to have some sort of signature, you know, weird thing so you can pick them out.
Oh, he's got like pieces of flair.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. It's like your flair. Yeah, like Scottie Pippen had the weird goggles, and that's mm-hmm, how you knew mm-hmm. in the NBA Jam game that you were playing as Scottie Pippen. All right, Merlin, your pick.
I'll also mention something if you want some kind of like it's right in the wheelhouse for like having on you kind of watch lightly, but Face Off on Sci-Fi is a series where makeup artists do Hollywood makeup challenges, and it's
Veronica
it's
watches
cool.
This. There's one guy who really creeps me out who's a judge, and he kind of looks
he kind of looks like a bird.
His hair looks like a bird spreading its wings.
He's like a chunky Dracula.
He really upsets me.
What is his name? Glenn Faceoff. I think his name's Glenn Faceoff. Oh, Jesus Christ.
You know what else is fun about The Bachelor is, like, don't you guys ever like watching like Meerkat Manor or like a gorilla documentary where you're just like looking at how these things behave, these animals? I think it's interesting to watch how people behave.
Alex, click on that link I just sent you.
You guys don't have any interest in that of like, we're just dropping a bunch of people into this situation and seeing how they behave? It's interesting.
Well, Meerkat Manor is different than like Planet Earth. You know, I don't enjoy things where they personify the meerkats as.
But like that's what's happening on The Bachelor, is you've got a bunch of meerkats and they give them all a personality and they tell you how to feel with music.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't enjoy that. It's pass. What Merlin? What am I looking at? Glenn Hetrick.
He's kind of the Zach Posen. Or the he's kind of like the who else? He's like the not the Tom Colicchio, but he's kind of like the head judge. He's the first guy that always gets introduced, and he's a Hollywood makeup guy who looks like somebody has inflated him.
Yeah, he looks like an inflatable leather daddy. I'm not sure how. Yeah, he looks like he's retaining leather.
This time of the month, retaining leather with Zach Posen. Another one from me. Mine are so boring now, I realize.
No.
I could talk about voice stuff. I got new powders.
powders.
I'm trying this thing called Cortisol Manager, and I think it's helping.
Is it a beta blocker?
I wish. No, it's this thing. My wife went to an acupuncturist for some stuff, including sleep. And this woman sounds real smart and gave her lots of good advice for stuff to try. Like stuff where in the past, like we've taken magnesium, which gives you the shits. And she had this idea for a kind of magnesium that won't give you the shits. And we're taking that, and that's good. But Cortisol Manager is this, it's a powder you get, it's a pill. And basically it's purports to reduce the amount of stress hormone.
What is it?
It's a pill.
But
it's
what is it?
It's herbs and shit. It's herbs and shit. It's herbs and shit. I mean, it's Cortisol Manager.
Of course.
And it doesn't have melatonin and stuff in it, but I take two before bedtime. Sometimes I'll take one in the afternoon when I tend to get stressed out. And it's got all different stuff in it. You should try it.
Wait, so is it somewhat fast acting? Like, you take it when you're stressed out in the afternoon? Does that, like, you're taking it in the afternoon?
It's not going to be like a Klonopin.
Okay.
You know, taking a new medication makes me stressed out, though, because I'm worried about what if I'm going to have a side effect or a reaction.
Or you get the shits.
Like, it's not going to help me relax.
Yeah, I'm going to buy a new pair of underpants.
I'm going to be really stressed. I'm going to be incredibly stressed out.
The trick is to buy two pairs of underpants and a whole suit of clothes.
That's my trim cap. I'm always wearing two pairs of underpants. Poopy.
Ashwagandha, L-theanine, which I take already.
Ashwagandha,
magnolia, that's a pretty name. And epimedium. Anyway, that's one of my powders. I take some other powders. The L-theanine, I can't tell if it helps, but I think that's supposed to help with calming. Anybody else got any good new powders?
Still on the Kratom train, Kratom stocks. A chain of
a bunch
sometimes
of people died from taking tainted kratom.
No, they everybody tweeted about how everybody died. You know what? People die from Tylenol every single day. Calm down. I don't know if you're making fun of me or not, but that this American Life
no,
episode.
I'm being every one of my sister-in-law's friends when they say something that they agree with. Thank you.
It's so scary. I don't know. The This American Life episode freaked me out. Kratom.
And remind me what the kratom does.
Kratom is a replacement for opiates. It's used to get people like in addiction centers often, and it also it brings about like a calming effect or a painkiller effect. I don't know. I'm trying to take like less ibuprofen and stuff for headaches and trying to.
Yeah, I should do that. I should do that. Yeah, I take way too much.
Yeah. I hear six is a therapeutic dose now.
I eat them like licorice. I mean, it's terrible. I got to stop.
Yeah. And I can tell, I think there is some placebo effect, but I don't know. It makes my neck and head hurt less. But I don't take the stuff that apparently gets you high and like gets you, gives you like the euphoric effect. That I'm afraid to try. But now that I'm saying it, I kind of want to.
Would you permit me to put your episode on Hobby Horse into the show notes?
Oh, yeah. That, okay.
It was really good. Wait, it was really? That and your Brett Terpstra interview were both good, but I especially liked you talking about the marijuana. I thought it was really good.
What is this?
Yeah, I talked to our friend Matt Howie about
Matt Howie has a new podcast.
It's really good.
He does. How did
I
miss
it?
This?
Right?
It's really, really good.
What's it about?
I can't
believe I didn't know this.
It's what a given person is nerding out about.
Oh, that's fun.
So like the episode with Jesse Char talking about Disney stuff was so fucking good.
Especially John Roderick talking about Alaska. Yes. Oh, they're all so good.
Jesse Char still goes to Disneyland twice a month.
I love it. And it's like a business expense. It's so cool.
Right. Because she's going to meet with Elaine. It's so great. Erica Hall on what it takes to be a triathlete.
Crazy.
Jeff Atwood on yo-yos.
Mm-hmm.
Jessamine on Trivia Leagues. Jason Kaki on Alto's Odyssey. But it's really good. It's exactly in the wheelhouse for me of just people talking about something they're really excited about that maybe not everybody's excited about. It's a perfect idea for a podcast.
I'm glad that I mentioned in that, oh, I am not high right now. I'm just very, very nervous. I should have been high for that, but...
Episode 9, Alex Cox enjoys some weed.
Yep.
It'll be in show notes.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's Powders. What's next? We gotta wrap this up soon.
Okay. It's me. When we did the vlog challenge, I'm not...
Yes. I had that one too.
Okay. So I really... forgot how much I enjoy editing films, but more mm-hmm. so I enjoy editing Verite stuff, and I'm not really on the vlog train. It's not really for me. YouTube's been doing some really gross stuff with demonetization of like queer creators, and it just makes me feel icky. However, I've been doing a lot of small projects just with friends that probably will never be released, but it's just it's fun. It's fun to have a hobby that does not become, you know, a source of income. Actually, no, I hope it does. But I don't know. It's flexing a muscle that I haven't in a while.
And so is it the being in it, or you're saying it's the editing of a Verite that you like?
Oh no, it is not me being in it. No. Yeah, that has nothing to do with it. I don't enjoy being on camera unless Syracuse has taken the photograph.
He takes good photos.
How about you, Max?
Oh, I had that one too, and it really scratched an itch for me of I want to make more videos, but I also don't really like the aesthetics of vlogging, and I don't like talking into the camera, so I haven't really mm-hmm. been able to figure out exactly what to do, but I do want to...
I can feel you being very interested in this, though. Seems like something where it bubbles up. You've got something inchoate going on.
I don't know. Maybe I want to do something involving politics, like go take a camera and like go into different campaigns and make a little documentary about it. I've been thinking about lots of different ideas, but it's very time intensive, and I don't have a lot of that. And mostly, like I said, like I just don't like the aesthetic. I don't like talking to the camera. I don't like how narcissistic it is that it's all about you. I think. And the other thing that surprised me was like when I started doing it just for fun, of like I'm going to this cool thing. I'll take the camera with me. Like mm-hmm. I think I found myself doing like a Casey Neistat impression, and I think most other people who do vlogs do a Casey Neistat impression. I'm not saying everyone. I'm saying most people do. Like he just. So owns that aesthetic that it's kind of everywhere. I don't know. I did mm-hmm. see a YouTube channel that got me. It's probably the most exciting YouTube channel I've seen in a long time. I'm looking it up right now just so I can get the name. You both will love it. It's a YouTube channel called June's Kitchen, J-U-N-S. I want you guys to both check this out this week. In fact, that's probably my challenge. It's my challenge, right?
Nope.
Oh, it's yours? No, thank God.
It's mine.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
We'll be covering that in the after show.
Okay, so it's a YouTube channel.
But I'm adding it. Sushi for Cats. Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
She cooks for cats?
It's called June's Kitchen. And basically, it's a Japanese guy who I think he's basically a professional chef or a semi-professional chef, and he cooks delectable Japanese food in a very peaceful sort of tone. And his cats watch and sort of participate in the cooking. He lets them smell every ingredient and everything.
He puts one of his cats in a basket when he goes out. He'll go out into the fields to get fresh produce. And he does this one trick that helped me, make sure the cats don't destroy all of our food. He lets them sniff everything. So they're like, oh, interesting. And then they don't attack his lovely meals, except the one bad guy that jumps into the garbage can. But spoilers. I love this video. They're so...
Have you guys seen Miniature Space?
No.
No? What's that?
My daughter is obsessed with this channel, and we watch it, and we kind of, not hate watch it, but we ironically watch it, but it's a guy...
Mini cooking. I know that. I'm familiar with this genre.
It's a guy in Japan who makes tiny, tiny versions of food and then serves it to dolls who don't eat it. It's really upsetting. Almost all of the tools are in slightly, slightly, slightly different scales.
Let me just get this straight is that you made fun of me for watching The Bachelor, which is like the most popular TV program in America.
But you
watch
a good
channel of a Japanese man cooking tiny miniature food with little implements,
and serving it to no one. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But you have to appreciate that he uses a tiny knife too. He has about a 1-inch long knife that he uses.
You are watching porn with your child. There's no way that this
good
is
for
not...
me. I'm sorry. Come on in, honey. Pop some corn. Hi. Okay, who are we up to?
I had one more I wanted to cover, which is recent episode, May 3rd, 2018, episode number 77, Hot Hands! And it's the one with Dr. Don, and oh my God, was I neurotic before about washing my hands and cleaning shit? But I have gone to a new level. I bought Purell dispensers and installed them in my home.
Oh my God. Are you kidding me?
No, I didn't. I'm not kidding you. I got the automatic Purell dispensers with the VF formula that Dr. Don recommended.
It's got it's a motion kind though, so you don't have to touch it.
Correct. And it's the refill. It's not refillable. They're disposable cartridges, but they last for like 500, squeezes or whatever. And man, am I on my bullshit? But it just gives me that extra kick. I still wash my hands twice in very hot water with a good long scrub with the little pumice in there just to really get in all the crevices. But then hit them with the Purell. You just get that extra little mile, that extra little something, something. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I love that you have done this. Now, how does your lady friend feel about having Purell dispensers in the house?
She thinks I'm insane, but I put them in. They're not like in our personal bathroom. I put one.
It's not by the bed or anything.
We have like a slop. No, yeah, it's over the bed. So if you move too quickly, it dispenses Purell onto you.
You think that's enough, Max? I'm dirty. I'm still dirty.
I put one. We have like a mud room, and we have like a big like sink in the mud room. So I put one over the entryway sink. So that's kind of washed. If I'm like out working in the garden or something, I like wash my hands in the big sink, and now I have the Purell there. And then I put one in the basement in my office.
I love
good.
It.
I have started to enjoy the smell.
I threw out
of
all
Purell
our sponges. I bought all new sponges.
Good. No, don't even use sponges. No.
Oh, how do you wash your dishes?
Yeah, how do you wash your dishes?
With a dishwasher.
Oh, Jesus.
I forget people clean.
Mudrooms and dishwashers. Hi, we're white.
You can't just put dirty dishes in the dishwasher. They have to be pre-scrubbed.
No.
Right, and then sanitized.
Well, not if you eat dry vegetables and bread. You're fine.
I guess if you're just eating toast, you probably don't need to scrub.
You probably don't even need to clean your toilet, Alex. You don't actually defecate, do you?
It smells like cookies. I have one more that is just very brief. I really liked the Les Mis challenge because it opened up a new facet of Merlin that I did not know about. And I have another friend to talk about musicals with that understands all the references. And it just makes me happy.
Guess my last one is something I've added to the cry list.
Yes. Every second of Dear Evan Hansen, every talk about Dear Evan Hansen. Even now, if I see somebody with like a cast on their arm, I get a little choked up.
Connor.
Oh, Connor.
Alex, or Max, rather. Max, has your heart softened about musicals in general?
No, I still think they're incredibly lame.
Why are they singing?
I've seen since we
is
did
that
the
one where the people dance.
Since we did the Les Mis challenge, I have. Let's see. I've seen Hamilton, Hamilton exceeded my expectations. I thought that it was, I thought there's no way it could be as good as I thought there's no way it could be as good as the hype. And it was really,
as much
really
as it
good.
Was sold to you.
It was really, really good. And it did make me cry at the end. And then we went and saw Wicked, and Wicked makes no fucking sense whatsoever. It was totally, it was like a hallucination. It was crazy.
Do you know the backstory of the Wicked story, essentially?
Do I know the story of Wicked?
the like backstory, the book that it's based on, and the whole drama around that.
Well, I'm sure that doesn't make any sense either if it was adapted into
the
musical.
That's the thing. It's really, it's just the like gayest, weirdest, furry-esque book. And they're like, there's something here. And they basically just picked out all of the stuff that they were like, hopefully an audience won't think this is gross. And they made everybody straight, which honestly, I don't care. Like, thank you for taking out the goat furries. But did you get that the mom fucked a goat at the beginning? And that's why Elphaba is green?
What?
Yes, because she fucked both the wizard and, spoilers for Wicked, she fucked both the wizard and a goat.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's an interesting book. Highly recommend it.
Oh, that's very upsetting.
Goat man. Oh, boy.
It's like a Edward Albee play. Why can't we just go see plays? Why does it have to be a musical?
Why do they have to sing? Why do they have to move
rhythmically?
Oh,
you know what? I did see a musical that I liked, though. Did you see the Hatfield versus McCoys at the House Theater, Alex?
Yeah.
That was a hell of a musical.
That's the thing. Half of the house shows are musicals.
Yeah, but I don't notice it when it's good. It's like VFX. Listen, it's like VFX. Okay. It's like VFX. It's like friend of the show Todd says. It's like people are like, oh, I only like practical effects. It's like, no, you love VFX and they make all kinds of stuff look good. And it's just when they're done really well, they serve the story and they're not conspicuous and you don't notice it. They just enhance what you're seeing. And that's how a musical works.
I go back and watch that. Is it Nerd Writer? But I go back and watch that video about David Fincher's use of effects from time to time. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's all you got to do is show somebody that video. You had no idea how many effects were in David Fincher movies.
Another one along those lines that I recommend is, I think it's on Vimeo. If you go look at the VFX reel, the like industry reel that this company made Wolf of Wall Street.
Yes.
So look at the amount of VFX that were done for the film Wolf of Wall Street, which you do not imagine is a movie with a lot of, you know, heavy VFX. It will blow your mind how many VFX are in that movie. But how much CGI and stuff is in that movie. But anyway, that's how I feel about musicals, is like, it's too conspicuous. Like, you shouldn't be thinking about the fact that it's a musical. It should just be a tool that's occasionally used to tell the story, I guess, sometimes.
Follow up on another thing that makes me cry, actually. You know, in Company, where there's a line, someone to sit in your chair and ruin your sleep. And now I have a chair. So sometimes I just look at my chair and get a little weepy. I love my chair and its square sides.
Some cat to sit in my chair.
And scratch it up. And destroy.
Some cat to knock over my things. Phone rings, door chimes, in comes Company.